Welcome to Starfleet Universe On Call. I am Paul Franz, owner of Franz Games. I run SWP Online, FedCom Online, and Starfleet Warlord. Just a reminder how to join us. We have TalkCast every Thursday night starting at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. You can either dial on the phone, just dial 724-444-7444. Just follow the directions, and the call ID is 17702. Or you can participate on the web. Just go to the TalkShoe website at www.talkshoe.com and search for call ID 17702. And if you need to contact me for any reason, my email address is sfuoncall@gmail.com. That's sfuoncall@gmail.com. Also, if you want to reach me via Skype, my Skype ID is FranzGames, FranzGemes. And, of course, you can follow me on the Twitters. My account there is Paul Franz. So to find me on Twitter, just go to twitter.com/PaulFranz. That's PaulFranz. And, of course, I have a secondary account called FranzGames where I announce this podcast. And, of course, news from Franz Games and different things about the client updates. And, of course, this lovely TalkCast gets turned to a podcast available on iTunes and Google Play Store and various other feeds around the net. Some quick news from ADB this week. New on Warehouse 23, drive-through RPG and working about this week is episode number 45. And it's free supplement. And it's color PDFs. Awesome. Steve Cole has been working on Caps Log number 53. You know, art, also art for City Master Starship book and, of course, Shapeways and other projects. Steve Petrick is busy working on updating Starfleet Battles, the rules and things like that, including, I think it was like one of the modules he was working on last time I heard specifics on what he was working on. And, of course, it was working on the Zinni and Gorn Master Starship books. Gene was busy working on proofreading that Master Starship book. Oh, shucker. And, of course, uploading ships Shapeways, make sure things are running smoothly with the customers. Moving on to the SB Online tournaments. Now, we do have a little bit of progress when it comes to Rat 47. They've gotten 6 turns done, and from the last post I saw from, I forget who it was, I think it was Craig, that they ended after 6 turns with being two hexes apart, and he said, oh, I figured 1 or 2 more turns, and we should be complete the game. When you're 2 hexes apart, yeah, things can get pretty nasty pretty quickly. I'm not sure. Unfortunately, he did not give any idea of weapon status, because if you're within 2 hexes and you both have just shot your wads and you have nothing to fire for the first 8 impulses of the next turn, what? It's not going to do much. Because you can easily get away. You can move a tremendous amount, get a new shield into facing, so you'd be good. When it comes to Platinum Head Tournament, not much progress there. We still have the one game that needs to be played around 1, which needs to be replaced by 2 people. At least that's my understanding. I have not seen any replacements. I probably should bug Bill about that. Round 2, we still have 2 games to play. Obviously, the one from round 1. And also, my game, I was busy last week, and I tried to get together this week. And this week, I mentioned it a little too late. My fault. I should have mentioned to Paul earlier in the week instead of Monday night to see if we can get together on Tuesday night. And he said he already had something planned. So, and it seems like weekends are pretty full with him playing against whatchamacallit. And Tuesday nights are one of my few nights that I'm available. Tuesday nights, I'm not available Wednesday nights. I'm definitely not available Friday or Thursday nights. Thursday nights being this. I can be sometimes available on Monday nights, depending upon, of course, Starfleet Warlord. That's usually goes from starts Sunday night, and I usually finish up Monday night. And when it comes to Master Tournament, we have quite a few people. I forgot to grab the numbers, but one thing that I should mention is that we have Roger Riordan coming back from the outskirts of the universe to play in the Masters Tournament. Hopefully, you know, he can get some games in beforehand to brush off the rust. When on to the library, no progress, sorry, since last week. We do have the completed conversions all the way up to 2,411, making the percent complete up to 72.42%, which is awesome to hear. And with that, that is the news for this week. And it's me, yes, the one, the only, the Paul Friends, welcoming you, the Starfleet Universe On Call. And tonight, we have the chat room and me, of course. You always have me. You always have my lovely, lovely voice. And hopefully you don't throw up because I just said that. Okay. But anyhow, tonight is going to be a night of just me chatting because of I've just been too freaking busy this week. And I truly apologize for not setting something up a little earlier, you know, contemplating the Starfleet battles in the universe and how it all comes into play. Yeah. Yes, I'm being overdramatic, but hey, what the heck. Might as well start this tonight, starting out talking about some of my work on Starfleet Battle Force Unity game. Actually, that is coming along quite nicely. It's, you know, I spent, almost all day, not quite all day Saturday, but quite a few hours on Saturday, going through there was a tutorial that a guy did when it comes to creating card games within Unity. A card game in Unity, and I'm taking some of his code that he used, some of his ideas, how to structure things. Some of the things I'm looking at and going, okay, that's not the way to go. So I'm going this way. For example, one of the things he does in Unity, which is definitely a no-no for what we want to be doing, is that he does what's called a get component within Unity. Like what get component does is that assumes that there's a single instance of a certain game object, you know, certain thing on the board. And of course, that is rarely the case when it comes to cards. At least if you abstract it, because one thing that he mentions, I'm kind of going through his videos quickly to grab some of the piece of code, because I remember a lot of what he talked about. Most of what I'm learning right now is actually about the Unity platform and how to find things, how to do things. He's helping in that regard, though in some cases, as I mentioned before, he goes into these, there's at least one instance where he goes into this advanced piece of Unity where it deals with delegates. And delegates are something that's really it's not a complicated idea. It's when it comes to, if you've ever done Java, it's more of a listener kind of thing where you add a listener to event handler, and then when something an event occurs, that listener gets fired, boom, and then you can react to what happened to that event. Well, the same kind of concept with delegates when it comes to the Unity, but the way it's programmatically done is totally different, and I'm not sure exactly how you get from point A to point B. That's the part that he missed, and that's why, to my mind, it's an advanced technique that duplicate what you're doing, I can't really duplicate what you're doing because I don't understand what you're doing. Unless I'm actually copying exactly what you're doing. And I'm not going to be copying exactly what he's doing. I might be copying exactly what he's doing to a certain degree. I'm not totally worried. Obviously, the one thing that he mentions in a later video, which I haven't gotten to because I'm building this up one piece at a time, is the whole idea of a card deck. When it comes to a card deck in a game, if you abstract it out, and I'm sure it doesn't take a genius to think of this, which is that a person's hand is just a deck, just shown in a different way. Because what it's a deck? A deck is a collection of cards. And in the case of a hand, a player's hand, that deck is just shown in a different format. You know, you can have a stacked deck so that basically you don't see how many cards there are. He does some 3D. Not. It's all 2D stuff. None of it's 3D, but it has some 3D-like effects. For example, one thing that he shows, which is I like the idea because of it, you can take just a reminder how if you take 2D and do a lot of things with 2D, especially a deck of cards. Who's going to do a 3D deck of cards? Why would you ever, in God's green earth, want to do a 3D deck of cards? Really? The only time you ever want to do that, it might be, is if you want to have a VR, you know, headset where you actually grab your cards and you can actually look at them. It's like, ooh, I'm sorry. When it comes to VR, you're not going to be playing with an actual card deck until we get to the point where basically people are visiting other people via VR. You know, the whole idea of kind of a hologram, but with a pair of goggles or a pair of glasses. Because I know when it comes to VR, that's one thing Apple really is. They're really all in for AR and VR. Currently, all of the AR experiences through their phone, through the iPhone. But you can. It's easy to see. It's easy to imagine that what they want is actually a set of glasses that people can wear. They look like glasses. But they still have the whole idea of VR. Now, in my mind, the tough part about AR and VR when it comes to glasses is, one, some people have prescriptions. But here's the one thing about Apple. I feel pretty confident that if Apple does it, they will take that into consideration, because of one of the things that Apple has always been very well known for is accessibility. For people that are blind, people that are don't see things well, you know, have bad vision, have hard of hearing, not deaf, but are hard of hearing. Things like that, they are really well known for how well they do that. So in that case, you know, I can see them easily taking that in consideration so that people can have prescriptions with their VRs. Now, moving back to the game, when it comes to the stuff with Battle Force Unity game, I've got a lot of the cards done. I got so I can actually create the different card decks. I got different cards now. I have the ship cards. I have the action cards. There's these order cards, which I am debating whether to use or not. Obviously, there are certain things I'm going to have to figure out. For example, the dice that get rolled, because there are some dice that actually get rolled. They are rare. They're rare. Let's be honest, they're rare. When it comes to using them in Starfleet Battle Force, because if I recall correctly, the dice are only used for Starfleet Battle Force are for like planet-based or fighters or PFs. Those are the two that use the die roll. Or there's a couple other ones which are special action cards, like for prime teams and things like that. But you know, most of the playing cards, you know, where you attack in Starfleet Battle Force are, for the most part, they just have a certain value, and that's it. And you go back and forth on that. That's one thing that's going to have to, I'm going to have to figure out an asset for that, because, as I mentioned before, the people who did the Vassal module, and then I downloaded it and I pretty much took the assets from that module. They actually included some dice in it, but I'm not going to be using it because I don't own the IP for it. You know, I'm not sure if they actually hired a designer or what, but I don't want to use their IP, anything that I could be even misconstrued as their IP. There are other things that are, you know, like the cars and things like that, which are definitely not their IP. Now, the only question is going to be when it comes to those cards is that there is a possibility that I'm actually going to be getting a whole new set of cards. This is the only reason why. And that is because of the resolution of the cards is, for the most part, relatively low. At least it seems like it's relatively low. Because of, to actually have it so it's visible in the game, I actually had to blow them up. Yeah, the dimensions of the cards are 200 by 300 pixels. So they're not exactly high definition graphics of the cards. Now, the going to be a question is going to be whether I can get high resolution from ADB themselves. I might be able to do that. If I can't, then I might actually spend the time and the effort to actually. I've got a nice scanner here in my office. And in that scanner, I could easily put those cards, and I can scan them myself. I might be able to get a high resolution. I have to double check. I'm not sure what the DPI that the person used for those images, because it's one of those things that when I'm dealing with ADB, I always have a problem with. Just because of I speak geek, they speak physical, you know, physical engineering, i.e., DPI, 300 DPI, 72 DPI, all these different kind of resolutions when it comes to physical form. Well, most of the time that I'm dealing with graphics, you don't really deal with DPI. You deal with the physical number of pixels that makes up that graphic. That's usually is because what you do is you take a physical form, you scan it in using a certain resolution, DPI, dots per inch, and then that creates another graphic with number of pixels based on the DPI times the resolution times the size. In which case, let's say 300 dots per inch, and it's a 10 by 10 picture. That's going to be 3,000 pixels by 3,000 pixels. So it's one of those things that the only time that resolution matters at all is when you're dealing with vector graphics. And when it comes to things like that, Lord knows if ADB has like Adobe images or, you know, actually if Adobe, that would be awesome. The only reason I say that would be awesome is just because that means I could create, I could actually use vector graphics, which means people can make, they could put this on a big screen or a small screen. It wouldn't matter. You wouldn't have to worry about it becoming grainy because I'm sure every one of us has had a graphic, you know, a picture, let's just say a picture, which then you zoom in on that picture in like a photo editing software or just photo viewing software, you know, in the case of my Mac photos. You zoom, 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 zoom. It's not like you can see infinite detail. There's a point where the picture, you know, the dots, they just become these squares, and you get bigger and bigger squares. So, you know, but if for vector graphics, the great thing about that is that since basically you've defined the actual objects themselves, you can just scale those objects, and they will have basically have infinite resolution which is awesome. And if maybe he still has the graphics, you know, the actual vector graphics for those cards, that would be fantastic. Now, the question for that would be, would I want to include them in a game? Because there's always the big issue with including something like that in a game is that people can extract the assets of that game. I'm sure there's a way of doing it for Unity games. So what we want to actually have, give people the ability to actually grab vector graphics of these images, let's say that they exist. Probably not. What we probably would want to do is have different size graphics, and based on the resolution, how much you zoom, you can use different size of graphics, or just use a very high resolution graphic and just have it scaled, and then hopefully the scaling works okay. But as you know, what comes issue is that when you scale it very small, like half scale, quarter scale, then things get really ugly. And anyone who's ever seen my SFB Online client knows how that can be. Because that happens with the counters. Because the counters, they don't scale well. Now, I wish I could scale them well, but that's not exactly something easy to do. To take a... for that, I might be able to do it. It takes a bit of time. I have to look in to see if there's actually a way of... vectorizing the graphics, because the counters graphics for the most part are relatively simple. So I can see why that would be possible. And the question is, does Java support those vector formats? I know that web browsers do. At least there's one that's I'm surprised. That you can use, it's called SVG, you know, Scalar Vector Graphics. I think that's correct. Which is really cool. It's got some really awesome features. And if I recall correctly, when it comes to SVG, is that SVG is almost like PostScript in that it's a programming language, if I recall correctly. Bring it up, do a quick search on SVG and seeing if this is gonna be that one. This one is that is rendering model. Yep. Okay, it's interfaces. So these are okay. Wait a minute. Don't mind me. I'm not sure how they're writing these things. They're writing up a documentation on it using an actual programming language, basic DOM interfaces. And I'm not sure what kind of language they're written in, because it might, for all I know, they might be written in, actually, it says interface, it's like SVG animated string, attribute DOM string, which I'm not sure what language that is being specified in. Yeah. I'm not exactly sure what I have to look at it some more to see if the format itself is text based or is it something a little more you know, it's binary or even text-based. It could be that it doesn't support programming like PostScript. PostScript is a programming language designed for printing, for graphics. Because I remember doing that one time back in my day, you know, where I did it for work, actually, which is... You want to talk about killing a lot of trees? I killed a lot of trees. Because the only way I had at that point, this is back in the days of DOS, before GhostScript existed, and that is to create, to run a PostScript program, what you had to do was that you send a PostScript file over to a PostScript printer and had the printer run it and print out the results. It was like doing an old school, jobs, you know, the like IBM jobs that you would send off to the mainframes and then have the your job run, you know, and then you get the output. It was a little faster, obviously, because I had the printer right there. But it was kind of cool, you know, because you can do all kinds of really cool things within PostScript. Obviously, the biggest issue with PostScript is that PostScript is a programming language, which led to some security vulnerabilities that you still have to worry about today. Though the engine itself, it's pretty good. You know, it's been hardened quite well. Now, anyway, let's get back to Starfleet Universe stuff. Now, so the game, it's going well. I got sucked into actually creating the game objects instead of working on the actual design. Not design, the layout. Let's put it this way, the layout of the of the table, because actually what I'm probably going to need to do, I'm going to have to probably do two separate layouts, two separate scenes is what they're called inside of the Unity. One is going to be for solo, or I said look at it, I might be able to use the same thing I'm using for solo to be, because you're actually in solo, what you're actually doing is you're playing against the computer. When you're playing against the computer, the computer also has a hand. And I have to double check on the rules for Starfleet Battle Force when it comes to solo play, because there actually are solo play rules. I've not looked at it to see how well they're designed when it comes to as an automated system. Because of that's obviously to start off with, it's a starting point. So I could actually use that algorithm, which is specified by the rules for solo play, and do that. Now, the one thing I was concerned about the solo play, from what I remember of what I read, is that with solo play, like the player, you have to, there's certain things that the solo player doesn't really do. So it's not, it acts a little differently than a normal player, which makes things a little more difficult. So to actually have it so that I could, in which case, it's possible that a solo scene, you know, solo layout for playing, you know, by yourself, it's going to be different than two player. And two player, because, and obviously, one thing that we have to also keep in mind is that there's also that there's going to be a difference between of the basic game and the advanced, and the question occurs, which is, do you support both? Or do you just support the basic at first and you add the advanced later? Or do you just go for the advanced and then add the basic later? Obviously, the easier way to go is go with the basic approach, because in that case, you don't have to worry about the screens. You don't have the front screen and front and primary. And then, of course, you have the reserves. And the question is, how do you go with that? Haven't decided on that, but it should be quite interesting. Moving forward to actually the SFU Online client, just because I happened to be online and someone was talking about, we should have a way of automating the traveling of the seeking weapons. Yeah, and then someone mentioned test object, and I'm using an IRC client for test object, so that when test object it's mentioned. Well, I get a beep. It goes, test. It says, hey, test object got mentioned. So, you know, go check out your IRC room, which you have, you know, the IRC program, which you've been running, you know. So I tweaked in and went, oh, hello, how you doing? Surprised them that I actually responded. It's like, well, I just told him that, you know, it's like Beetlejuice. You say his name three times and he appears, you know. But anyhow, I haven't got much done when it comes to the, we haven't, because it's definitely not a me effort when it comes to converting the library. That's definitely something I want to get done this year. It might be that, you know, we don't get a big push until summer, you know. Obviously, for me, summer and winter, there's not much difference. The only difference at the moment is that in the summer, I'm going to have more children hanging around the house. Quote, unquote, children. She's going to be 21 years old and she's going to still call her children. Well, I'm allowed to. I'm 52 years old at the moment. She's only 20 at the moment. She'll be 21. She's still my kid. And for anyone out there who is an adult and you kind of a squeamish at the whole idea of being your parents' kid, sorry, it doesn't change. They're always your kid. In the case of the one that's still in Mansfield, that is my wife's baby. So that is always the way it will be. So it will be interesting. I did something stupid. Forgive me. I'm trying to recover from something that was just really, really dumb. That is, I tried to re-log in, or I clicked on something, and what it did is, okay, I can't go backwards or forward. Okay, well, I'm going to have to. Oh, Dave! You're going to need to help me. Because I'm going to need you to grab me the chat. Because I just lost all of the chat room. Okay, I'm going to go back. Okay. What I'd like to do at this time. I just lost everything that came before this moment in time. I'm assuming, because actually everything seemed to be quiet. Okay. Oh, cool. Okay, good. But yeah, that's actually the whole idea of automated seeking weapon movement. I want to do that. I have to double check to see where it is, because I'm pretty sure I do have some of the code which will actually do the automated running. I think the biggest issue that, of course, we have is that at the very least, you're gonna have to click a button within the SFU online client, so to tell the client to go move your seeking weapons. Of course, most of the time when it comes to moving seeking weapons, in an automated fashion like that, most of the time you really don't care when it comes to tournament play. Though, obviously, let's go back. Just, I had a thought, which was, of course, the big thing when it comes to if anyone's played by email, played, not played by email and playing one impulse at a time. I still remember that one person that drove me absolutely out of my mind because they wanted to control it so much when it comes to every single impulse. It's like, no. The idea of play by email is that you let go of some of that. But one thing, when you play by email, I mean really play by email. So it's more of an asynchronous. The whole idea is to get through more of the turn at one point. You realize that you can actually loosen up the exacting control of things like seeking weapons for the most part. When you're outside of range, range 10, just for giggles. That's a good number. Outside of range 10, it doesn't really matter that much. As long as you hold one thing true, which is either you are trying to lead your target or try to trail your target. As long as those two things are the case, it does not matter. You can move a hex here, move a hex there, and it really will not matter that much. It really will not. Some people have this sense of that they need to control everything, every aspect, everything of the game. And that's one of the things that you find out that when it comes to, because if you ever play by email and actually play it, you actually start to think about, okay, when do I actually want to stop the game and rethink? When do I actually want to stop the game and rethink? It's a rare thing indeed where you actually want to stop the game and actually have to deal with things. But there are certain things, obviously, that you will have to rethink. For example, person launches a 30-point torpedo. Yeah, at that point, you're probably going to want to rethink. Unless that a 30-point torpedo when it's outside of range 15. Who cares? If they're firing at you at range 15, the only time you might care is if you're heading right towards them, then you might actually go, okay, I want to turn away, and run out the torpedo. And that's one of the things that I can see that occurs, but things like, okay, they launch drones outside of range 25 in a turn play within the first 16 impulses. Does it matter? No, it does not. Will it change what you do? It will not. Unless you're going headlong towards your opponent, that's not going to change what you do. So, just a reminder of sometimes you don't need as much control as you think you need, which is always a good thing. Because that might be an interesting thing to do. Because as we had the discussion, and I mentioned, I sent out a New Year's resolution for the year for both Starfleet Warlord and for SCP Online. And a couple things. One of the things I definitely mentioned for SCP Online is the whole idea of, and you guys already know this, I already mentioned it to you guys, but I'll bring it up here again, which is the whole idea of that SCP Online can be web-based. Why would you want web-based? Well, the biggest thing for a certain part of it, there's the whole issue of getting an application written in Java actually installed on a person's machine. It's becoming in my mind, more and more difficult to do it, because it seems like inevitably, you know, antivirus is going, hey, wait a minute, this includes the JVM. It's a Trojan, it's a Trojan, it's a Trojan. No, it's not. And there's no way to prove it that it's not a Trojan. Now, the one thing I'm going to be looking into, obviously, to help in that regard is to be able to sign my application. Now, my understanding, last time I looked into this, to sign the actual application from, get a certificate from Microsoft, but to do it, you actually have to have a application that's written using the Microsoft frameworks, i.e. is a native application. And this is not a native application. So I will definitely need to look at it. So, yeah, it's right. Yeah, right. Yeah, according to this, I did a quick search on Stack Overflow, and they're saying that okay, just you can use the signing tool. Now, this post is from 9 years ago. So, makes things a little more difficult. Now I have to. I have to use Make Cert to create a certificate, and right, you can sell a self-signed certificate. Yeah, so I'll see if I can create a self-signed certificate in Windows, because I can easily do it, but I'm not sure how. Microsoft, I would like to actually get a certificate from him. Thanks. Russ came up with a name for his playtest system. It's called the Playtest Scenario Development System, or PTSD for short. Yeah. Post-traumatic stress disorder. Yes. Got all of it. Hey. So, I found another one for signing applications. It's for signing a UWP application. See this. Well, it is not one. So, this one might work in... I'm not sure. Microsoft doesn't give a date for this. I'm looking at it. Don't mind me. Okay. Okay. I can do a self-signed cert. I'm going to see how to do this. Sorry. But should be interesting. It's hopefully, at least creating a self-signed certificate might help in certain regards. You know, obviously, I'm not sure if it will. I'm sure it's best if I can get a certificate from, Microsoft or someplace else. Because I know code signing certificates... last thing I checked, I think they were $200. And that's for a year. It's geez, it's a lot of money to spend on a certificate for, minimal use, really. As long as people are happy to click, it's a valid one. I'm going to be creating some instructions when it comes to Starfleet Warlord to have the directions on how to install it on a Windows system. Also, I have to write up some instructions for a friend, Andrew Campbell, which is always good to see. And actually, one thing to welcome back into the fold, who has been away for many, many years, one Roger Reardon. It's good to see him back. He re-upped his subscription to SMP Online. Actually, he's going to be part of the Masters tournament, where hopefully somebody will kick his butt. I'm hoping, actually, as I want to contact him, see if he might be available to play this weekend, just to maybe, knock off the rust, at the very least, so he's not completely utterly obliterated. I'm glad to see him back. You know, play some SMP Online. I think what we're going to do is we're going to end with that. I don't want to draw this thing out to be a lot longer than it really should be. It's been wonderful chatting with everybody. Obviously, I had a nice little talk about the wonders of the Starfleet Battle Force Unity game that I'm working on and some progress there. And, of course, some things that I'm doing for SMP Online. And hopefully, make things better for people. What I would love to do is have it so it's web-based. I have to actually sit down and actually learn. There's some tutorials when it comes to TypeScript, because I think TypeScript is actually an awesome language. I'm hoping that I can get it so that the TypeScript compiled is actually downloadable. So that, because that's what I want to work for Starfleet Warlord Aid. Because the Warlord Aid is more basic. It's more simple when it comes to web-based than SMP Online. Also, there's some issues with the server side that doesn't quite work right. So I still got to work out, just find out what am I doing wrong within modifying the IRC server to support JSON API. So with that, I am Paul Franz, and I bid you a good night.